Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. National figures take center stage during standard legislative debate. Plus, Republicans react to an investigation about sexual misconduct in Wisconsin schools. And two public figures put to bed speculation that they'll seek higher office. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for October 17th.
I'm Anya Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm Scott Bauer.
Welcome to Rewind, Scott. This week, some of the news was actually things that are not going to happen. So we are in kind of elections watch mode and always waiting to see, will they, won't they? And this week we got two they won'ts. So the first one being Mary Falskowski is not going to seek the 7th Congressional District. That's Tom Tiffany's seat. She released a statement saying that, you know, she's very committed to serving the Northwoods where she is from. After months of thought, prayer, and discussions with my husband, I've decided to not seek higher office. This is not the right time for my family. And besides, I love representing my constituents in Madison as a state senator. So obviously, she is the Senate president. She's been this kind of ascending star among the Republican Party in the Senate, really kind of a champion of rural issues, a medical marijuana champion as well, which has been a really interesting thing to watch from her as a legislator. And so there was this big question of whether she was going to run for Congress once Tom Tiffany announced that he would be running for governor. So always this kind of domino effect question mark. And now we know it's not going to be her.
Yeah, I mean, her name was in the mix for governor potentially also, and she had said if Tiffany runs for governor that she would not, you know, take him on. So when that happened, then it shifted to, well, you're going to run for Congress. And about a month ago, we had talked with her in the Capitol about that, and it seemed to me at least that her comments were leaning toward that she was not going to do it, just given the vast size of the district and what it entails and all of that. But now we know for sure that she is not running, so...
Right.
She's out of the mix.
That question of, like, do you want to go to Washington? Do you want to stay in Madison for some of the issues that kind of matter? But also that leaves that race without kind of a clear front runner. She has some amount of, you know, statewide profile as the state, as the Senate president, rather. And so now that kind of leaves the question of, all right, who's going to get in there? Who's going to try to be the next congressperson from that district?
Yeah, there's definitely some people who have said they're going to run and other names that are floating around. So that'll be a big field on the Republican side for sure, because it's such a deep red district. So we'll see how it ultimately shakes out.
And then the other kind of announcement of no, I will not came from Ben Wickler. So he is the former chair of the state Democratic Party, really, again, sort of a star on that side of things. And he stepped down as chair over the summer, which raises the big question of what's he going to do next, including is he going to run for governor in the event that Evers doesn't run, which he is not. And so this week, too, Ben Wickler put out a statement saying that he is honored that friends and allies across Wisconsin have urged me to put my own name on the ballot for governor, but I am determined to do all I can to ensure that a great Democrat wins in 2026, but I won't be seeking the nomination myself. And so, again, this kind of, in this case, it is not an empty field. It is actually a very crowded field of Democratic candidates for governor. He would have been one kind of prominent name among many. He's also the sort of second big non-announcement. We heard Josh Call say last week that he's going to seek a third term as attorney general rather than seek the governor's race. And so it also, again, raises this question of, okay, Ben Wickler, sort of star fundraiser. He set all of these records for what he raised for the state party, really transformed the Wisconsin State Democratic Party, has national recognition, national friends. I remember at the DNC, you know, Nancy Pelosi and all these kind of other major national Democrats coming out to sing the praises of Ben Wickler. Really unclear sort of what he's going to do next in his career, if not this.
Yeah, I mean, there had also been talk of him running for some other office other than governor, you know, potentially to keep his name out there and to be in office, you know, before he may run for something higher. But then you had Sarah Godlewski announce that she's running, you know, and for lieutenant governor or for Secretary of State.
She's running for lieutenant governor.
Lieutenant governor.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's like a whole mix of like where people are going. And there was talk maybe he'd run for treasurer. But clearly with him saying he's not going to run for governor, but still be involved in the organizing side, the fundraising side, but not in the same capacity that he was as chair. Similar to Josh Call in that he's got young kids and mentioned that as being something that was a reason not to, you know, get more heavily involved this cycle, which was the same thing Josh Call said. So two people who obviously Call still running for attorney general and Wickler still being involved behind the scenes, but two people who are, you know, roughly the same age and will be around Democratic politics for a long time.
Yeah, and I remember when Wickler said that he was stepping down, you know, that was the big question is what next, and he kind of said, I'm going to support Democrats. What that actually looks like is sort of a question. He also, I think at a luncheon a couple months ago, maybe over the summer, talked about wanting to write a book about sort of extending the Wisconsin Democratic Party playbook to national elections. So, I don't know, we'll be keeping an eye, I guess, on publishing lists to see if that moves forward, and sometimes writing a book is also a bit of a precursor search of seeking office, so yep. Paying attention to that. This is also a big week in the legislature at the Capitol. Both chambers were in session, the Assembly and the Senate. The Assembly was largely focused on sort of tough-on-crime legislation and a lot of first responder-related things. There was an hour-long break so that everybody could honor first responders from there. So it was a very sort of just a rote day at the Capitol, let's say. I think some of the more interesting legislation, if I'm allowed to opine like that, came out of the Senate. One of them would be a bill to essentially ban cell phones during instructional time in public schools. It would require school districts to create policies that would essentially do that, with exceptions for, you know, emergencies. Elsewhere, this is a bipartisan issue. It exists in New York and Illinois, passed by Democrats. Here, it is very much a GOP issue, and so it had largely Democratic opposition. They said it harms local control, makes it harder for parents to reach kids during a mass shooting or an emergency event. And so let's take a look at some video of that debate right now.
I have strong opposition to this bill, which seeks to mandate policies prohibiting students' use of wireless communication devices during instructional time, which basically taken away cell phones. My question is, why are we, the state, worried about taking away kids' cell phones before we enact legislation that prevents kids from having access to guns and prevents mass shootings?
Wisconsin seems to be the only state where this is a partisan issue. We look at other states, this is passing, this has already passed. It hasn't been a discussion of why this is important. When we look at polls, 97% of children will utilize their phone at least once a day within the classroom, within the schools. 97%. When we look at polling, Wisconsin wants this. Wisconsin is asking for this. Marquette poll came out. It was 89% of Wisconsinites are asking that this be done.
So that's that cell phone bill. And then the other kind of interesting piece of legislation was a bill that would make it easier for candidates to remove their name from a ballot if they want to. And so that is pretty clearly directly coming out of what happened with RFK Jr. in the state last year. So he ran as an independent, ended his candidacy, endorsed Donald Trump, and then all of a sudden was sort of concerned about being a spoiler for the Trump campaign, particularly in swing states like Wisconsin, and tried to get his name off the ballot in a number of states, was successful, was not successful in Wisconsin, because currently the law says you can only get off the ballot if you have successfully qualified to be nominated. You have to be nominated unless you die, is currently the way that statute works. There was a whole series of court cases about this. It went up to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court didn't actually weigh in on that statute. They basically just said the way this whole thing was handled was improper. And so that wasn't sort of fully resolved, or at least it wasn't changed. The law stayed. And so now this is a bill that says that candidates can remove their name up until the day that the Elections Commission kind of certifies candidates. So it is very clearly the RFK Jr. bill.
In fact, it's called the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Act. So
there you go.
Very explicitly right. In reaction to this, yes.
Right. And so then you end up, of course, seeing kind of a partisan divide over this. And so, again, the debate in the Senate was about that. Democrats say that this could allow potentially somebody to run a successful primary campaign and then drop out. And so then members of that party who have chosen somebody to represent them no longer have a candidate on the ballot. But technically, both of these bills, although there was that debate and that back and forth, they did pass with some bipartisan support. Passing out of the Senate, they'd already passed out of the Assembly, so now they are heading to Evers' desk. So what do you think? Do they stand a chance?
Yeah, so he hasn't said where he would come down on either one of these. On the cell phone bill, you know, that is law. There are similar laws in 35 other states. So as you mentioned, Democratic and Republican states have passed this. But Governor Evers, you know, as a former teacher, superintendent, state superintendent, he's been pretty consistent in wanting schools to have local control over how they operate. And the bill would require school districts to come up with a policy banning cell phones. It's not too big of a leap to think that he might veto that bill on the basis that school districts ought to be able to decide for themselves what their policies ought to be. And in fact, the Wisconsin Policy Forum had a report that showed many, many school districts in Wisconsin already do have policies on cell phones. It's not consistent. It's not every district. They're not all the same. But there are a lot of schools that have policies already. So, again, it wouldn't be a surprise if the governor leaned on that and said things are already working the way they ought to work. But he hasn't said. And on the RFK bill, it did have bipartisan support. There were a lot of Democrats who talked against it for the reasons you outlined. So it would be somewhat of a surprise to see a Democratic governor sign a bill called the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Act. But stranger things have happened, and we just don't know where he's at on it. So those are two to watch.
Yeah, that'll be really interesting. And then the other sort of thing that's sort of looming over all of this is the first time that the Senate had met since July. There was a press conference where Democrats kind of criticized their colleagues who are in control of that chamber for not coming in. And so there's also kind of that question of what is actually going to get accomplished in the legislature before election season really kicks off, and or election season already has kicked off.
Right. I mean, the question for Democrats, which I asked at one of their news conferences, was what is worse for you, the Senate not coming in or the Senate coming in and passing a bunch of stuff you don't like? Mm-hmm. And so it is true they have very rarely come in, I think, 7 days so far, which is way down compared to other sessions. And there are a lot of theories as to why that is. Republicans are worried about losing their majority in November. Evers is going to veto a lot of things they do. But, you know, on the other hand, conventional wisdom is that you come in and you do stuff so you have issues to run on. And you can say, we've passed this bill, we did this, we did that, the governor vetoed it, but here's what we stand for. Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahue responded to Democrats by saying, look, we're in today, we're going to be in November, we're going to be in January, we're going to be in February, and we're going to be in March, you know. So those are at least, 4 or 5 days are going to come back. The Assembly has been in much more frequently, but really we're in this mode of not a lot happening because the budget's been enacted. Neither side seems to be agreeing on a whole lot, so we'll see what actually gets done.
Yeah. The other thing, you know, you talk about the issues that people are able to kind of run on or call attention to on social media or in flyers or that kind of thing are sometimes these national issues that come to the fore. And so we saw that happen this week. Both chambers and both parties kind of enacted these like national figures to make a point, to very different national figures. So in the Senate, the GOP proposed a resolution to honor the life of Charlie Kirk. And in the Assembly, Democrats tried to call attention to the Jeffrey Epstein case. So start by talking about the Charlie Kirk resolution. So it would have been his 32nd birthday. And resolutions are kind of these symbolic things, right? They don't have the weight of law, but you say this is Diabetes Month, or this is Jewish Women's Heritage Month, or First Responders Month, as it was in the Assembly. So they're symbolic. They're a way of just sort of stating values on behalf of the chamber. And so this one is about Charlie Kirk. But there was a big debate over this resolution. So Democrats wanted to add language that would have made it a condemnation of political violence, obviously in response to his violent assassination. And then two black state senators specifically spoke about some of the language that he used in his life. And so we'll look at some of the video of that debate right now.
Through Turning Point USA, he challenged a generation not to surrender to cynicism or drift into apathy. But to stand firm in their beliefs, to stand boldly in their values, to stand unapologetically for America. Let this resolution be more than words etched into a journal of legislative proceedings. Let it be a call to each of us to live with the same clarity of conviction. Let it be a promise that we will not shrink back, that we will not be silent, and that we will not allow hate to have the final word.
The only truth that I see in this resolution is Charlie Kirk was first and foremost a devoted husband and loving father, fiercely committed to his wife and their young children. But the empathy that I have for his family, Charlie never spared or even thought about extending that type of empathy to people who look like me.
And so Johnson also, you know, read from statements that Kirk had made about black people, Muslim people, Jewish people, kind of drawing attention to, again, sort of that divisive nature. And so we saw, I think, an echoing just of that national debate that occurred after his death of that tension between political violence and talking about the legacy of a person. Obviously, he inspired many Republicans, especially young Republicans, and was not particularly admired on the left. Then in the Assembly, sort of on the other side of things, another national figure, obviously a very different national figure, Jeffrey Epstein. There's been this obviously ongoing attempt in Congress to release files and documents related to the investigation into him and his crimes, his associates. Democrats tacked an amendment onto an unrelated bill. It was a, sort of a day of looking at tough on crime legislation. One of those bills would have made it harder for prosecutors to not seek charges against certain types of crimes, including crimes against children and sex crimes. And so Democrats tried to tack an amendment onto that bill that would have said, comma, and release the Epstein files, and essentially call on Governor Tony Evers to formally ask for the release of these files. They tried to tack that amendment on. It was ruled, you know, sort of non-germane. As they got up to speak, the Speaker Pro Tem continuously kind of overrode this, saying, what does this have to do with Wisconsin? Epstein did not commit his crimes in Wisconsin. And, you know, again, this is a slightly symbolic thing. I don't think the thing getting in the way of Congress releasing these files is whether or not Tony Evers has written a letter on the with the seal of Wisconsin behind him. But again, we see this kind of national debate coming to the floor and a little bit of staking out the camps of Democrats really wanting to say, like, we stand strongly on this issue, and Republicans saying, what does that have to do with what we're doing here in the chamber?
Yeah, I mean, you made an interesting point at the outset about at least on the Charlie Kirk one, this came on a resolution, you know, whereas most resolutions are honoring UW-Whitewater's baseball team or, you know, reminding the Edmund Fitzgerald, you know, 50th anniversary. So the fact that we've had these very partisan fights over a resolution, you know, speaks to, I think, both parties being in touch with the national mood and the national politics of what's going on, Epstein and Kirk both being very hot button issues for both sides. And I actually had a Democratic lawmaker during a break chatting about this, and they told me that their constituents more and more are not, all they're talking about is what's going on nationally. They're not talking to their representative about Wisconsin issues, which is very interesting, and I think just kind of speaks to the larger, you know, mood of the country where everyone is so fixated on what's happening out of Washington and nationally that even this lawmaker was picking up on, you know, they're not talking to me about things that are going on in Wisconsin. And I think that was reflected a little bit in the debate we saw on these two issues.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And, you know, so much of actually what happens on the floor, we talk about sort of the higher profile and more interesting pieces of legislation. We don't necessarily talk about the, like, regulations on 911 call centers and snowblowers and, you know, all of these other bills that do come forward that really do materially affect people's lives and are just not up for debate. They pass so quickly because they are just, like, not, like, big political issues, and that's what ends up getting, like, the attention and the spotlight. So that is kind of also just a comment on how people engage with politics, I think, a little bit more broadly. Turning to a sort of completely different subject, the Cap Times this week published a pretty bombshell investigation into DPI and how it has handled allegations of sexual misconduct against educators. So this was Danielle Duclos at the Capital Times. She published this report that found that DPI had looked into allegations of sexual misconduct or grooming against 200 teachers, aides, subs, and administrators between 2018 and 2023, and found, among other things, that state officials had allowed teachers to forfeit their license instead of undergo in-depth investigations. More than 80 educators sort of chose to go that route. And, you know, just to kind of give weight to both sides of that, some of those people speaking to Duclos said, you know, they did so under duress. They just didn't want to go through the stress of an investigation. It wasn't them admitting wrongdoing. DPI Jill Underlee, the state superintendent, did not comment, saying it was a conflict of interest to do so because she oversees licensure. But a spokesperson said that they are that public schools are always looking for ways to improve safety practices, but are hamstrung by a lack of funding. They only have one full-time investigator for these kinds of things. But immediately there was this kind of Republican response, especially Republicans and DPI have kind of long been at odds. So Assembly Speaker Robin Voss spoke out and said he was shocked and horrified by this, and that DPI, instead of blaming the legislature for a lack of funding and constantly asking for more money, should instead be trying to solve this issue. And then Representative Amanda Nadwesky, she said she'd already been drafting two bills, but now there is a third bill kind of in a package of things aimed at improving student safety. So one of those would not let educators surrender their licenses undergoing investigation. So she said that's a loophole that she learned about from that story. And then two that she had already been kind of working on. One would require schools to develop policies that clearly outline what is and is not appropriate communication and contact between staff and students. And then one would establish a criminal penalty for grooming children. And so that's kind of a word that doesn't currently appear in state statute. And there will be an informational hearing about this on October 23rd. It'll be interesting to see whether DPI sends a representative and kind of what the ongoing kind of outlook of this is.
Yeah, I mean, this has popped up from time to time, issues with what happens with teachers and when they're accused of wrongdoing. And most notably, I think, was when Tony Evers first ran for governor, a case was brought up how he handled, as state superintendent, a teacher that had been accused. And his opponents tried to use that as did use that as a major issue in that campaign against him. So this whole area has been one that has, like I said, kind of popped up in the spotlight, gone back down. This report definitely had a lot of, you know, a lot of, as you outlined, a lot of facts that are causing Republicans to react and want to get more information. Another person who reacted that I found very interesting was Tom Tiffany, who's running for governor, and he tried to tie in the current and former lieutenant governor in this whole thing, Sarah Rodriguez, who's the current lieutenant governor, who's running for governor, and Mandela Barnes, the former lieutenant governor who may be running for governor. You know, Tiffany's saying, what did you guys do about this when you were lieutenant governor? You know, of course, the lieutenant governors have no power really to do anything, but they are part of the governor's administration. So you definitely have a politicizing of this issue. And you also have, as you mentioned, a lawmaker with some bills that, you know, potentially DPI could get behind, you know, not knowing what their position would be and don't want to say that they would. But, you know, when you have legislation that addresses an issue that I think DPI, you know, had said in the story, they felt like there were some concerns from their side. There's a potential here for some actual work to get done in this area, but it is obviously very political, and it will be difficult. But it seems like something that both sides could potentially find agreement on in some ways.
Yeah, last session, actually, this was an area of bipartisan agreement. There was a bill that would essentially apply the idea of sexual harassment, workplace sexual harassment, into school environments, and that was, it was introduced bipartisanly, it passed bipartisanly, and so that's the kind of thing, I mean, people want kids to be safe at school, and so that is often something that both sides can kind of get behind, but the devil is always in the details
right.
in terms of how that
Absolutely.
Gets expressed. And then we have a bit of an update on congressional redistricting. And so ordinarily, I don't know that, you know, briefs getting filed would rise to the level of the Rewind treatment, but obviously congressional redistricting is just all over national news. There are attempts in most states right now to kind of relook at their congressional districts. Obviously, there's been the fight between Texas and California to kind of balance out each other's seats. There are efforts in Utah and North Carolina, a number of other states. There are new maps in Missouri. And then the Supreme Court of the United States is poised kind of any day now to weigh in on a kind of a key provision of the Voting Rights Act that could potentially make it much harder to challenge congressional redistricting on the basis of race. And so all of that is kind of going on. That is the context for what's going on here in Wisconsin, that there's been these continuous efforts to also redraw congressional maps here, which are majority Republican. The latest lawsuits filed this year say that the maps by liberal groups say that the maps are currently gerrymandered in an anti-competitive way. So essentially, a Democrat could never win in a Republican area. A Republican could never win in a Democratic area. This has been just sort of this ongoing case. It's in the circuit court. But then last week, these liberal groups filed briefs saying that they want the Supreme Court to appoint a three-judge panel. So what is that argument all about?
Yeah, basically where we're at in this whole thing is, I mean, it's a lawyer's dream, right? It could be a great law review article. But what they're arguing essentially right now is what court should hear these lawsuits? Should it be a three-judge panel? The plaintiffs argue that state law is very clear that any redistricting challenge needs to be heard by a three-judge panel, or does it need to start in the circuit court? And so the issue before the Wisconsin Supreme Court right now is just that, is who should hear this case. It's not the merits of the case. It's not any of that stuff. And so we're kind of at a very, I would say, procedural point in this whole thing, which could go on for a while. So we'll see, but that's what they briefed on, and that's what we're waiting to hear back on the Supreme Court on.
And of course, what they want is for these maps to be redrawn by the midterms,
right,
which we are growing ever closer to.
Right.
And so that's kind of a ticking time, and that the courts also need to weigh in on whether any decisions that they make would sort of unfairly get in the way of voters being able to.
Right. And the closer you get to that election, the more reticent courts are to change the rules of the game. Right. So there is that urgency on the plaintiff side, on both sides, but on those who want it to be changed to get some kind of ruling. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other kind of piece of this is that Republicans are now calling on not just Janet Protasiewicz to recuse, and they often call on her to recuse from things, but now they are also calling on Susan Crawford, who's been in robes for only a couple of months now, saying that they are both kind of unfairly biased. For Protasiewicz, she made comments about legislative maps when she was running in 2022, so that kind of still hangs over her. Crawford appeared on this donor call during her election in the spring that had been advertised as like a way to get more Democratic House seats in play. And she has said, I don't speak for my donors. I have no control over what people who want to give money to my campaign do. And here, justices, have complete control over whether or not they recuse.
So that's the key point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's up to them.
Exactly. So we will see kind of how that plays out, who sits on it, who hears it, and it'll play out over the next couple of months, as these things often do. And I think that will do it for us at Rewind this week. I am Ani Van Wijntendonk.
And I'm Scott Bauer.
Thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
See you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.